human rights. You know, it's something we all think we get. Fairness, equality, basic dignity.
Mm-hmm.
But what if this whole idea, something meant to protect, you know, the vulnerable, is actually being used as, like, a tool?
Yeah.
You know, to push political agendas. That's kind of what we're going to unpack in this deep dive. And trust me, it might challenge some assumptions.
Yeah, it's definitely complicated. We hear about human rights violations, you know, certain parts of the world, but we don't often talk about the power dynamics behind it all or how much manipulation there could be. So today, we're going to use Stephen Rapp, who was a U.S. ambassador for war crimes, as a way to look at how human rights can be, well, weaponized.
Yeah. Rapp's background is pretty interesting. Dedicated his career to prosecuting war criminals, you'd think.
Yeah.
He'd be, you know, all about justice everywhere. But when you look at what he actually did, like his focus on Syria, but not so much on Israeli human rights abuses, it raises some serious questions.
Yeah. And that's where this idea of selective outrage comes in. The source material, it actually uses a quote from Animal Farm. You know, George Orwell. It says, "All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others."
Oh, wow.
It's satire, right? But it highlights how some groups, some countries, are held to totally different standards.
So are we saying Rapp, like, deliberately chose to focus on Syria and ignore other human rights violations?
I don't think it's about, like, assigning intent. It's more about understanding there's always context, a framing, a narrative. And Rapp's actions, at least how the source material describes them, seem to fit this pattern of focusing on adversaries but kind of overlooking what allies are doing.
Right. Okay. One example that really stands out is Rapp pushing those Caesar photos, those images. They were presented as,
yeah,
like proof of these awful atrocities by the Syrian government.
Yeah.
And they got circulated everywhere.
Right. They were used to justify calls for intervention in Syria, but there were always questions from the beginning about whether they were real and even the timing of when they came out.
Yeah, the source material mentions that, like,
yeah,
how the Caesar photos just happened to appear right when the U.S. was pushing for regime change in Syria. So was Rapp tricked by disinformation,
mm-hmm,
or was he using those photos to push an agenda?
It's a tough to say for sure, but what we can say is this is a perfect example of how human rights can be manipulated. It shows why we have to think critically, question the narratives we're given, especially when those narratives fit perfectly with political goals that already exist.
Okay. Then there's what Rapp did after he left his ambassador post. He went to the Atlantic Council, right? That think tank, known for being pretty hawkish on foreign policy. Is this just a coincidence? Or does it show a deeper link between human rights advocacy and trying to achieve, I don't know, geopolitical objectives?
This is where it gets really interesting. Rapp going to the Atlantic Council isn't just some random thing. It shows a bigger pattern where people who have been vocal critics,
mm-hmm,
of certain countries, certain regimes, they end up aligning themselves with these institutions that promote specific foreign policy agendas.
So are we talking about a system where think tanks and NGOs are really shaping the narrative around human rights?
Exactly. They have a lot of influence, shaping how the public sees things, influencing policy decisions. They often act as, you know, gatekeepers of information.
Which makes you wonder,
yeah,
whose interests are they really serving? Are they really all about human rights, or is there something else going on?
Right. And that's a key question.
So, bigger picture, Rapp's case, it seems like it highlights these three things that the source material keeps talking about.
Okay.
This hypocrisy of selective outrage, the way war crimes investigations get politicized,
yeah,
and how powerful institutions like think tanks, how they can manipulate narratives.
Exactly. And each of those issues, I mean, they just show how complex this whole thing is, how human rights are talked about, and how people act on them.
Okay, so let's start with selective outrage. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, that's a pretty stark example, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Decades of oppression, but the international response, pretty weak.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder why. Why is there so much silence around their suffering when other conflicts get immediate condemnation? Calls for action.
Right. It seems like the outrage, the media attention, whether people want to intervene or not, it all comes down to who's involved and how it fits with certain, you know, geopolitical interests.
Yeah, you got it. It's not that anyone's suffering is less important. It's that how we see it and react to it, that's often filtered through this lens of political convenience.
Well, right.
You know, but the source material says this selective focus, ignoring some human rights abuses while focusing on others, it's connected to the West's imperial agenda and their pursuit of global hegemony.
Okay, which brings us to that second point, how war crimes investigations get politicized. The source material says that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not about finding the truth. It's about getting specific political results.
Yeah.
Take the International Criminal Court. You mentioned RAP was really focused on the Syrian war crimes allegations.
Yeah, yeah.
But people criticize the ICC, saying they focus too much on African countries and ignore similar accusations against powerful Western nations.
Exactly.
So are you saying that the very institutions that are supposed to uphold justice, they can be influenced by politics?
It's not about some big conspiracy. It's just recognizing that these institutions aren't, like, separate from the power dynamics of global politics.
Right.
The ICC needs countries to cooperate, and those countries, they have their own agendas.
Okay. The source material brings up the U.S. and what happened in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there are credible allegations of war crimes, the ICC hasn't really investigated, probably because of, you know, political pressure. It all feeds into that idea of a double standard.
Absolutely. And this is where those powerful institutions we talked about before, the think tanks, the NGOs, mm-hmm. they come in. They kind of shape the narrative around these issues, how the public sees it, and even how policymakers see it.
So they have a big role in framing how we talk about human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And that framing, a lot of times, it aligns with whoever's funding them, right?
Think about it. Think tanks, they put out all this research, reports, analyses, and the media uses them. Policymakers cite them. NGOs, they're often on the ground. They're giving firsthand accounts, shaping how the public thinks.
But like we saw with RAP, these organizations can also be used to make certain actions seem okay or to make others look bad. And all of it is under the name of human rights.
Exactly. And that's why the source material highlights how important alternative media is and grassroots movements. They challenge those dominant narratives.
It's about getting different perspectives, hearing those voices that don't usually get heard.
Yeah.
The ones that the mainstream media and institutions try to shut out. So it sounds like we need to, like, be more active in figuring out what's true and what's not, especially with these big geopolitical things, right? We can't just, like, passively listen to whatever we hear. We got to think critically, question the sources, try to find different perspectives.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the source material is saying. We need a more, I don't know, nuanced view of how we talk about human rights, recognizing that it can be manipulated, that we always need to be paying attention.
The source material uses this phrase, making windows where there were once walls, when it talks about independent journalism. What do you think that means?
That's a good question. I think for me, it means that independent journalism, it can break through the propaganda, the spin,
mm-hmm.
and show us the truth, even if it's, you know, uncomfortable or inconvenient.
Right.
Independent journalists, they're not bound by the same things as mainstream media. So they have more freedom to investigate tough issues, you know, challenge the official story and give a voice to the people who are usually silenced.
So it's like shining a light in those dark places, holding those in power accountable and giving us a more complete picture of what's really going on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why supporting independent journalism is so important now, you know, especially when information is so controlled, so manipulated. The source material argues that independent media and these grassroots movements, they're vital for pushing back against the dominant narratives, exposing the hypocrisy, especially when it comes to human rights.
Wow. This has been a fascinating deep dive. Kind of unsettling, too. We've looked at how this concept of human rights, something that should be universal, you know, how it can be twisted and used for political gain. We talked about Stephen Rapp, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, of these powerful institutions, and the importance of independent journalism. A lot to think about, that's for sure. But if there's one thing you want our listeners to take away from all this, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to question. Don't just accept information at face value, no matter who's saying it, how credible they seem. Be skeptical, be curious, and look for different perspectives, always. Human rights are too important to be used like, I don't know, pawns in some political game. We all have to be informed, we have to be engaged, and we have to demand better from anyone who claims to be fighting for justice.
So to wrap things up, I want to leave our listeners with this. Protecting human rights, it takes constant work. We have to think critically and be willing to challenge those in power. Let's not let this noble idea get corrupted by hypocrisy and political games. Let's make sure it stays a force for good in the world, protecting those who need it and promoting justice for everyone.